everyone. Welcome to the Protection Made Easy podcast. Today is the episode 22 of season 2, and it was GDPR news. What did you find about this podcast episode?
It was fun. I think we divulged into a little bit of chaos near the end. But it was a really good session. I mean, there was so much to talk about, to the point where we didn't really get through everything, but you know, namely the stuff with the ICO. There's a lot of movement mm-hmm. with the ICO right now, namely, obviously, the commissioner resigning from his post, and he made a little post on LinkedIn about that. So we had a little discussion about that, a little bit of gossip almost, and also in other ICO-related news in relation to complaints in relation to their complaints handling processes and procedures. So, you know, it was really interesting. We talk a lot about the ICO, so mm-hmm. you know, sometimes it's, you know, you got to look from both sides and almost be a little bit empathetic in some cases. And, you know, obviously the case with the commissioner was quite surprising, quite mm-hmm. shocking, and you know, potentially something good for the ICO maybe in the future, who knows. But how did you find the session, Kate?
Yeah, I really enjoyed it. Definitely like the ICO. I think in terms of timings, it's definitely the good timing for John Edwards to resign and potentially thinking about the restructure, even on procedures and internal policies on their own. But for me, definitely the fact that the UK banning the social media under 16 years old was my highlight of the session. We had a chance to speak a little bit about social media accounts, the ones that were banned or the ones that are not included within the list, as well as how far should the accountability goes mm-hmm. within responsible and make these platforms responsible, or if they are doing the right thing. And we navigate a little bit as well if 16 is actually the right age or what should be the next considerations. But we will leave it to it. I hope you have a really nice weekend, and I'll see you later. Goodbye. Enjoy.
Good afternoon, everybody, and happy Friday. Of course. Have you got any DPP-centric news, Kate? How has your week been?
Yeah, it's been all right. For the ones that were not here in the beginning, I came from Portugal, so it's always like a very tiring travel coming from Lisbon to the lovely Leeds and being up to speed, actually, with all these emails and what is actually going on in the office, because it's always very different, isn't it, when we are like working remotely, whereas when working face-to-face, it's much easier. And I spent all my week, actually, until now, giving advice notes in consent versus legitimate interest for photos and videos. So it's always like a good one that I do like to do. And delivering training. So yesterday, I delivered a training session on refreshing data protection in the workplace. And I really do enjoy those sessions. You know, on that point, and I'll give you definitely the voice now, I feel I already know like the staff members are like part of the training sessions because it's refreshing, refresher training. But it's just there was definitely, and someone that is in here or listening to me, please don't get upset with me. But I just felt that there was no engagement at all. So mm-hmm. in the sense of, and I do feel that sometimes these sessions can be a little bit.
Are you calling someone out?
No. Well, if it's
I was just checking.
I'm just thinking like the training session is obviously someone delivering some sort of like knowledge and like some tips and the practices should be carried over. But at the same time, it's important to have on the other side as well, like some sort of challenges, any scenarios or anything in practice that you would like to know. So it should be like
it's got to go both ways, doesn't
exactly.
it?
Exactly.
Yeah, obviously, I know we spoke about training last week, didn't we? So it's very topical. But, you know, engagement is key. And for those who don't know, obviously, I'm taking up a little bit more of a stand in relation to some of the training stuff we do with DPP. And I'm coming to learn that is that, you know, you're only really as good as you can make and push the people to try and work with you. And I appreciate that anytime I speak to anyone who isn't a point of contact in data protection, they kind of express to me how boring they find data protection. It's always one of the first things they say, I guess,
which is always nice when that's my full-time job. But when they always the main thing for me is I always kind of say, like, well, my job is to hopefully change that perception. And if I mm-hmm. can't change that perception, I'm going to give you enough stuff to go away to
absolutely.
To maybe make what's something boring a little bit easier for you. You know, boring and easy is better than boring and difficult.
Difficult, yeah.
So, and it's always about letting them know what you're trying to. What you want them to take away. It's almost kind of forcing their brain to be thinking about it subconsciously, I guess.
But, mm-hmm.
Yeah, I mean, I've had a similar week in that vein, actually. You know, a little,
yeah,
bits of advice. Loads of SAR stuff.
Yeah.
I've been working with some customers with some quite sensitive SAR matters. And then with the work I did on support as well. Obviously, I watched the England on Wednesday.
Well, I cannot. I should say that I watched Portugal as well, but probably we'll leave that conversation for later.
And of course, Nick's won the final as well. And you did say in five, so fair play, Charlotte. I was expecting the Spurs to wangle back, but the England game was fantastic. Portugal didn't win either, so it means for the sake of this podcast,
we'll just carry on.
Yeah,
we'll move on to England, and we'll find me then. Yeah, it's where we are, so I'll be down.
But yeah, no, it's been a good week. It's been a bit of a fractured week. Just one of those and Scotland as well. I'm half Scottish. Big win against the big nation of Haiti. I am half Scottish.
Yeah, it probably is.
You can tell by my complexion that I'm half Scottish with how pale I am.
Yeah.
My father is from Scotland. Honestly, why do I have to justify myself, honestly?
But anyway, on the SARS one, actually, before we crack on with the news, because I know that there was loads of going on, I'm not sure how you feel yourself, Kane, and anyone from the audience that would like to just share any thoughts about it. But a couple of my clients' housing, they are feeling from the last, I would say, between April until this moment, an increase on SARS in more than the double from exactly the same period of time from last year. So we have come identifying like a trend of like, we have currently actually one of our clients has more than 30 SARS going on now at the same time, just request after request after request. We always tend to understand what will be the trend, if it was any complaint associated with it, if it was any sort of within the department on the service that was failing in any sort.
Mm.
And it kind of actually came to the conclusion that is, again, really related to the respect claims and loads of individuals already.
Disrepair claims.
Yeah.
That's interesting.
Yeah. And as well as associated already with the fact that data subjects already think that the stairs is already in place.
Yes.
And they are already making those requests.
I've been seeing loads and loads of stair requests at the moment. I think that has something to do with the AI's adoption and interpretation of it, and not understanding that it's or you know how it kind of leans towards what the person wants. It's writing in that vein, I guess. So we've seen a few personally, and I ran recently some analysis on the kind of cases that we get. I kind of look at those kind of retrospectively.
Mm-hmm.
It is so overwhelmingly SARS at the moment, you know, about everything, you know, the meetings and calls that we're having, the advice that we're giving, some of the work that we're doing, even me personally, who doesn't always dwell as much in the client sort of interaction these days.
Mm-hmm.
Super, super heavy focus on SARS every time I speak to people. It's always that they're getting so many at the moment and they don't know what to do. So, you know, there's absolutely something in the water. But I always pinned it down to the holidays. I always thought it had something to do with the holidays, and that you get spikes during, like, you know, time when people have less to do. But that seems to be becoming less of the curse now.
Yeah, I think it was spot on, absolutely, when you're mentioning the AI. I actually did a test. I made myself as a AI user, and I wanted to do like a sub request, and I would like to see what would be the response that AI platform that I use, ChatGPT in this case, would come back to me. And they already were including STAIRS as one of the frameworks to actually announce alongside with the UK GDPR, making the point already that it was already in place. And that's, well, that was definitely not April 2027, was definitely April 2026.
Did you argue with it like I like to do?
Yes, I did, like, this is not correct. This is actually not true because of this, this and that. They apologized to me and then they made the request back. They made the request back on subject access request, and then I could see clearly then the 30 requests that my client is facing, 28 of them are literally coming from ChatGPT because it was a copy and paste of the one that I have seen in front of me.
You know what?
It's like, okay.
It's interesting. It's interesting, actually. I've noticed it significantly in two sectors, more so than anything. And it being education was one of the big ones. I had seen like an overwhelming amount of like AI generated responses to all sorts of matters, and obviously housing, but that's probably in it, the probably more factoring than the nature of we work so with so many housing associations. But it's not something that is gonna. But my gripe with it is how much it argues with you, and what I find is that people are really getting tied up, in knowing when to stop responding to the data subject with like a SAR and related to a complaint off the SAR as part of like the review process. Okay. So people are kind of going around the houses with this, with quite frankly, with the AI back and forth because we're saying it's good enough. It's arguing the other side and you're on this horrible little hamster wheel.
Absolutely.
And, you know, I've really been trying to work with customers recently to help enforce that kind of confidence in knowing when you've responded to in a sufficient way that, you know, that you're satisfied, that you've done everything you do in terms of your SAR procedure and your internal review process, and that you know when to stop the communication. Because a lot of the time, these people, I don't think, are going to the ISO. The reason I say I don't think is because they might be, but as is telling in recent news, the ICO have just been storing a lot of these complaints now for information purposes, and they don't even investigate them, which is something that is part of the news that has been brought over recently. So it's from the Good Law Project and the Open Rights Group. They're currently challenging the ICO over its handling of data protection complaints. Obviously, we know that the ICO has a legal duty to enforce data protection laws, and have effectively said that they don't think they're fining enough considering the amount of complaints that they're receiving. So obviously we know they received 40,000 complaints last year. And I tell you what, I bet it's going to be a lot more this year. And it said they only fined, they say seven. I don't think that's right. That can't be right.
It can't be right.
Is that Pecker included?
Actually.
No, that can't be right. I find that really hard to believe.
That's a lie.
Yeah, that can't. No, I don't think that's right.
Only 40,000. Yeah, I know.
And then they've had 220,000 in the last six years.
Yeah, 6 years.
But do less than seven fines a year.
Yeah,
that's a day's work. Well, it is if they're just fobbing them all off. All you have to do is say no, do that template email that they have, no further response, and carry on in that light. But the main criticism of the group is that the new complaints framework that was introduced by the ICO in February, which is basically the risk-based approach of categorizing the submissions based on the regulator's own definition of harm and risk. And if it's low or moderate, they just store it purely for information purposes without any investigation. That's the primary concern. The ICO have obviously defended that stance, saying that that's an investigation in itself by storing it, which I don't really know how I feel about that. But it is interesting. What would you? I don't know what you do if you the ICO. You can't. I don't think you can win. I feel a little bit sorry, actually, because I don't know if it's possible to win.
I have a lot of comments actually around this, and two of them being actually potentially questions more than an actual comment. I think that the ICO for a long time right now, and we are definitely around like the last couple of episodes, and particularly with this and the latest news, I think that the ICO is definitely a guidance body more than the enforcement body in itself, because we have the complaint being eventually the last step of the cycle of the request, etc. And we are relying on the regulator that it was supposed to actually to understand these complaints and understand on behalf of the organizations and vice versa, and provide you guidance and potentially find and guide you throughout that life cycle. But as we've seen in the last couple of episodes, we have, even me and you pose a question, is it actually worth it? Even with the data breach, we are just waiting for years and years and years for some sort of guidance and some sort of steps, but we don't have that time, and the regulator is definitely making this very much available. And my other comment is around the data subject rights. Are they just currently are just there in the law for just as a theory? Because in the end of the day, they are being exercised. The regulator should be there to protect the rights and freedoms as well as the GDPR. But then they complain and they are being used for informational purpose rather than actually help the data subjects on behalf of the organizations. And in principle, by nature, there is a natural imbalance of power. So the regulators in these cases are actually really, really necessary. But then there is no actions whatsoever. Mm. And then these news come up, and probably that's just the news and nothing actually will change. And I feel it's going to be a little frustrating, you know. I do feel frustrated with this.
Yeah, it's hard, isn't it? Because you want people to have faith in the regulator and the work that they do. And you almost want people to be aware that this is a negative outcome that could occur to them. Mm-hmm. Right now, I think there's a lot of businesses who take the stance that I'm going to be fine because the ICO won't take action.
Yeah.
Which, you know, it doesn't necessarily mean they should be like flinging out fines left, right and centre. But
absolutely not. But it's just more in the sense of making sure that you are protected. If anything happens, you not only will have some guidance if you need, but as well in even how to exercise your rights and what shall I do in this instance, but as well if anything goes wrong, can I exercise my rights? In the end of the day, it's very difficult.
I mean, I've never worked for a regulator, and I know that when you speak to anybody else or anyone else about other regulators that they work with, I know they all kind of say that I don't think that I've ever spoken to has been particularly happy with many of the regulators that they work with. Mm-hmm. Might be a few people who have done that are maybe shining lights of examples. And I'd love to know, because I'd like to look into it really. Because I do think I come at it from this perspective of, you know, the ICO maybe not doing everything they can. But in honesty, I don't know. You know, at the end of the day, I don't know. I don't work at the ICO. I'm not the commissioner. But we feel like that something needs to be done and something needs to give, but maybe it's a common problem. In other ICO adjacent news, we had heard back from the ex now information commissioner.
Yes, everyone, John Edwards resigned immediately.
Yeah, I
we celebrate or not? Well, shall we say like wee?
I'm sure Tim Turner is probably celebrating somewhere away privately.
Are we waiting for the LinkedIn post now?
I've not actually seen anything. Think I've seen a comment he left saying, who's John Edwards or something like that.
John Edwards too?
which was quite funny, actually. But I'll read out a little bit of the LinkedIn post that John Edwards has come out with, and I'll leave you to paint your own kind of picture, you know, because I feel a bit gossipy here, but it's quite exciting. But I'll read it out, and you know, I'll let you all lead your own conclusions. But it wasn't necessarily what I thought it was going to be. But I'll proceed.
Here we go.
Today I've notified Ian Murray, Minister of State, of my resignation from the role of Information Commissioner and Chair of the Information Commission, effective immediately. Since February this year, I've been the subject of an investigation. While I have not agreed with how that investigation has been conducted, I accept my position has become untenable. From the time the investigation was launched, I've accepted that there have been occasions where I exercised poor judgment and made attempts at humour that were inappropriate and caused offence. It's for this reason that I have decided that it is appropriate that I resign from my position. I do not wish to be a distraction to the ICO's important work. And a little bit more a waffle at the bottom, but that's where we are. You know, he's officially resigned, which is interesting. Mm-hmm. And again, the nature in which he has resigned seems to be. It's for, yeah, no, fair.
You come out.
You know. It's, It's hard to say, whether it is purely that or is there's something more underlying. It's hard to know. Obviously, we're taking his perspective of a story here.
Mm-hmm.
But maybe we'll find a little bit more out about this. But definitely. The importance at the end of the day is that he has resigned and that it could mean, may mean, significant change potentially.
But we
don't know. He can't say I've met the commissioner personally. Can't say I've even been in any kind of proximity with him. So I don't know him personally. So I can't really comment on anything in regard to it, honestly. I don't know how I felt about the post. I felt a bit, I don't know, my eyebrow was slightly raised, I think.
I mean, to be honest, as we can all see in the group chat and in our celebration in any sides, I think it's a good step. I think considering as well the latest news, I think definitely the ICO needs the urgent restructure. We did need to look into how to do things, the process and how things will work. Definitely Jordan Edwards going, I think is a very good news and probably is a very good timing now to look into internally and see exactly what will be the gaps and exactly how things could be changed.
Mm-hmm.
Because back on the complaints, obviously you are not saying in defending that the ICO should definitely look into every single complaint that they receive, but at least a little bit of reassurance at least that there is some sort of priority. And unfortunately, I don't think that is going on at all.
Yeah, well... We'll wait and see.
We'll see.
All I hope is that whoever he has caused offence to is okay.
Mm-hmm.
At the end of the day, and that they're not too distressed by whatever actions had occurred. And hopefully they can move on in a positive light. And you know whatever comes of this will be. But I was hoping for a tad bit more ownership.
Absolutely.
So should we talk about the big kind of sticking point in the news this week? Kate, I know you already have some thoughts on this because you wrote a little post on LinkedIn, didn't you, earlier this week?
Yes, I did.
About UK banning social media platforms for the under 16s. Do you want to take the floor, Kate? And,
absolutely.
And have a bit of a rant about it.
So, as Kate mentioned, finally, there were so many news in the latest years where the UK wanted to ban the social media under 16 years old. There were lots of discussions around which age should be appropriate, discussions around 14, 15, 16. And then finally, the decision was under 16 years old. This happened this Monday, where social media... The biggest ones will be Snapchat, YouTube, TikTok, Instagram, Facebook, and X will be the ones actually implementing these. It will be like a phase-all, but these will be the main ones where social media would be banned under 16 years old. And I think this will come in a very good timing because children's privacy is being in the news for at least 3-4 years now constantly. So many problems around the risks involving with them, the protection issues and the considerations, particularly around TikTok and things around locations and things around deep fakes, involving images, sexual images, etc. So it's a very good step in my eyes. Mm. This conversation started because Australia already approved their law for 14 years, for 16 years old as well. But then Florida, for example, and say so the United States, they approved as well, but 14 years old.
Mm.
And I have a couple of thoughts actually, and I'm very happy in the end to share the link about the article where I kind of navigate a little bit like deeper on this. But very good step, I would say, definitely on social media being banned for children. My concerns are around the age itself. Why is it 16? I think potentially currently does not mirror our reality because 16 years old, 15, 16, we are already, people can get married. We have the exercise of some rights.
At 16?
And like in something you are anticipated, but...
In the UK?
Well, at least in Portugal, there are countries where we can't get married.
Oh.
If you like anticipate yourself, you have like a notice, you can get married. Yeah, 16 years old.
Oh.
Yeah, well, giving good news now to you.
Can't say that. Cannot say stuff like that.
No, I'm joking. But yeah, if you can, you have Yeah, if you have like parents' permission anticipation, you can get married 16 years old. But why did you not know this? Yeah.
I didn't think about it at 16.
Yeah, but I mean, I think that's the main thing, because you already have like some sort of like responsibility and some sort of like job and like responsibility as an individual in the world. So I'm not sure if now banning like social media around this age is actually appropriate. Then the other thing that I have some thoughts around is about what we know that the platforms are a problem. We know that there are some sort of like risks involving this. So where is the accountability for the platforms rather than just banning and banning and banning? Let's analyze the platform itself and see where can they be handled held accountable. And finally, I think the data protection as age assurance, how can you be sure that individuals, again, are 16 years old, yes or no? You can have the ID verification, you can have self-declaration in terms of methods on their own. Can they raise their own issues? So I'm not sure. I think it's a very good step, so I'm not saying otherwise at all. I am just raising concerns on how actually this will be handled now forward.
I like it. I do. What I want to understand is, my kind of thing is, I feel like it almost removes some kind of accountability from these parties, you know, like X, for example, with the Grok stuff. Irrespective of whether you're 16 or you're 37, some of the stuff with Grok was not right, irrespective of age, doesn't matter.
Yeah,
I know that they've removed all everything doing this and that, but it can still, and social media can still be a harmful place, irrespective of how old you are, you know, depending on who you are as an individual and the current state of mind you're in. Yes, of course, we have to pay more of a focus to children. They are likely to be more vulnerable. They are more sculpted by what they see online. And I definitely agree with, you know, the stuff like TikTok. I don't know about YouTube. I thought it was strange. But I guess it's the same kind of thing. You know, you have these like Andrew Tate types, don't you? Who are kind of morphing perception of young children, which, you know, but, you know, if you agree with it yourself personally, fine. But I don't. And it's awkward. But I don't think it's getting to the point where it is just children. I think children are the primary concern, but I think there has to be a broader look at other people, you know, people who may be also considered as vulnerable and still need this level of support. Don't push the flashing lights away from these parties who could be causing harm just because we are solving an issue, but we have to see how we're solving this issue. Again, how do we actually enforce this as a parent, as someone who is deploying these vices as a social media platform, how are they going to do it effectively? That, you know, presumably, again, by some kind of authorization measure similar to what we've already got.
Yeah.
But, you know, how effective are they? I don't know, because I am of age, so I don't know how effective they are in actually proving that.
No, I agree. And I think putting an age around these banners is, it seems like after then 16 years old, and as soon as I'm 17, then the problem is over. And I don't think that's definitely not the case. And I feel, I hear you when you are talking about vulnerable individuals, even when they are older, et cetera, should giving like attention. But I feel like as an individual, even me and you, when faced with this social media, we are all considered vulnerable in a way by nature, because we don't have control of things being going on and the things that can be produced, the way things will be actually handled, even the expectations and the transparency or the lack of them. I feel in a way, arguably, we can be all considered like vulnerable individuals in a way, obviously different levels, but we can be seen like that, because currently, and don't get me wrong, we work data protection practitioners, and the technology of things is very linked to us, but it's in the personal life as well. Social media were important in a way for social skills, etc. But currently, more than ever, cyberbullying, bullying, things are actually going on. And I think that the approach initially, even with the Online Safety Act, was okay, let's see what we can do for the platforms to be held accountable, and let's see, try to put in and make some boundaries here. And I feel with this that they come to the conclusion indirectly that they can't do anything about that, or they don't want to. So therefore, they are trying the other way, that is making, well, the audience bans, or you can't do this, and if this happens, so therefore with some consequences. Because anywhere in any articles that we have read, we saw anything around the platforms themselves.
Yeah.
Anything. It was always about the individuals, what we can do, cannot do, the level of the education level, that the schools actually should be restructured to actually give some sort of education to the children to how to use this, which I think is very important. The same goes for parents. But then we have the other way around, that is, I'm talking about myself, for example. My parents are around 70 years old, and they are they don't know anything about social media. And imagine that I was probably a little bit younger. So under this, they probably will give me some sort of advice or exclude me more or less from this technological world, because they don't know, they don't have that level of education. They don't understand what they're saying. Mm. So I'm putting the responsibility and the permission on someone that actually does not have any knowledge about the things that are being held. There is always the catch-22 in every single thing that we talk about this. But the only thing that I would like just to raise, just to, for me to give you the voice now, I'm not sure if you realize, but there were loads of other social kind of media that were excluded from this list.
Yeah, one of them people being, were just saying in the chat, weren't they?
WhatsApp, one of them, and Telegram. That were like the big ones that came to my mind.
Because, well, they were saying Reddit in the chat as well.
Yes.
Which is very interesting.
Because Reddit is literally a mirror of X, more or less.
Well, it has a section on it that is very, it can be quite explicit, I think.
Yeah.
And they'd recently just got in trouble with Ofcom, haven't they?
About
children specifically, wasn't it?
Yeah.
Because of the explicit content on the site. And I think it can be, I don't know a lot about Reddit, in fairness, but I think it can get really quite intense on there, can't it?
Wild, as Charlotte is saying, I think is actually definitely the right word. Because I'm never a user of Reddit, but I think is a kind of a mirror of Twitter, well, X in this case, isn't it? More or less, you've made the comments, you can share whatever you want to. Then they decided to make these forbidden words that you cannot say, that can lead to hate or terrorism, etc. So there are the forbidden words. But then there is nothing around like explicit content, around like images or things being shared, for example, in Reddit, and the same with Rock. But I don't know, with the WhatsApp, actually, the one that I remember, the news that we spoke about, incognito version of WhatsApp, the fact that have the incognito side of things. So just for me, I just feel like, so WhatsApp is excluded, but then there is by default this incognito version where children actually can access, talk directly with a chat box and the AI kind of platform that is embedded within WhatsApp, and it's fine. So that's not banned. Whereas I'm going to probably Instagram and I'm not allowed until I ask permission from my parents. I just think it's inconsistent. I don't think it's consistent.
I still think children are going to find a way, aren't they?
They will.
One of my favourite things from it circulating in the news is they interviewed a bunch of children, and one of them was like, what are you going to do now? You have like 6 hours free. They asked them what their screen time was, and she was like, I don't know, I'll just watch paint dry. I was like, fair. Okay. But it does present an issue, I suppose, because stare at a wall, thank you.
Yeah.
Stare at a wall, yes. I do like it. It gave me a chuckle, but also made me think like, really? Like, also, like, 6 hours on, six hours on your phone a day is a bit mental, I think. But maybe I'm just getting old, I don't know. But I do think it maybe presents a problem in that I do think children are just not going to know what to do with themselves, and they're just going to find other ways to, there's always a different site that's going to pop up every now and then, that's going to be something that they can attach themselves onto and that they can all do something with. So it's going to be, if they really want to go this route, they have to be really, really on the ball, I think, in being able to enforce this in a meaningful way. They've got to be super on the ball, and I don't think it's going to be easily done, honestly.
No, I really don't think so. I don't think so.
So it might just be something that's been, it's going to be thrown about, and then in reality, it might not do much, and it's not going to solve the root issue. And I think that's my problem, is that I don't know if it is going to solve the issue.
I don't think you will, particularly when this is actually, the approach is not even consistent across the world. You can go to different countries and changing by your VPN, and then what is not allowed in the UK is actually allowed, for example, back home, or, well, Portugal and any other countries, for example, where these bannings or age does not exist, and therefore you cannot now you are allowed to use it. I feel like sometimes we underestimate children. I know that the discussion sometimes is like around 13 years old, etc. But I think we sometimes underestimate children, saying that they are not able to understand or not capable to do it. But they do. They do. They are. They really are. And I think sometimes these guidance and these legislation, the frameworks, and it's just not appropriate. I don't think it's that adequate to the audience itself. So we will see. I think it will be good to understand how this will be approached, because in Australia, apparently, these were actually working, they say. In terms of studies, this was already implemented, I think, last year or 2 years ago. And apparently, they don't have, well, as far as we are aware, many issues coming from it. So, and all the education side of things, schools, etc., were restructured to include some sort of like social media awareness and technology, how to use it, etc., which I think is really important. And easy education was even extended to the parents, which I think it will be, very beneficial, at least for my parents.
It has to be done. I mean, my mum's a teacher, so she's always been pretty on the ball with this. When I was younger, I didn't have social media for ages. And when I did, my mum had this app. It was called like something Nanny. It was on my phone.
They could see what you're doing.
Turn it off. I couldn't go on half of the stuff I wanted to. If I try to get onto something that she didn't want me on, it had like approved apps and stuff like that. It just stopped me from doing it until I found a way to turn it off. And I think that's all that's going to happen in an equivalent sense. It's not going to be the same. So I think it's called Net Nanny. That could be super wrong. But my mum was very diligent. But you find your way through these things, and I imagine, without a little bit more care, it's not going to be the right approach. I appreciate what they're trying to do. I like what they're trying to do, but it's got to be better than just a statement, and this sweeping kind of responsibility of, you're not allowed social media.
Yeah.
But, it's one of those things, isn't it?
Yeah. And I just feel that it's just the wrong route. I think, we cannot leave. We're gonna leave this up to the people on the other side. We should be making sure that the platforms are actually controlled. We are talking about.
It wouldn't be a problem, would it?
Exactly.
It wouldn't be a problem if the platforms were doing as they should be.
Yes.
But obviously, you don't want to restrict things like an individual's freedom of speech and so on and so forth. But
it's a very broad concept, isn't it, now, currently?
A little bit, yeah. a little bit.
Not going in very detail in here.
Yeah. I don't want to get like political on that. But I think the issue is the platforms. I don't think it is children's fault that they are being sucked into social media, because it is addictive. And I think to say as an adult or as a person that children are addicted to their phones, I think is hypocritical in most senses of the word. Mm-hmm. I think we're all addicted to technology in some kind of way. And it should be that we are allowing people to do what they want because the platforms themselves are able to...
They allow us to do
that. Yeah, they're able to allow us to be who we can be, at the end of the day. That was far more philosophical than I wanted that to sound. But I think that's the underpinning of it. And I'm very, very, very intrigued to see how this all unfolds. I'm sure you are, Kate, because I know all this stuff is very near and dear to you, isn't it?
I'm curious to see how it's going. But I think we are on bang on time, aren't we?
Pretty much, yeah. I think was there anything else we want? There was one bit in it that I wanted to. I'll run past it. Shiny Hunters, the hacking group. They are back again, and they have, if I can find it, I believe hacked into the Council of Europe Fair enough. Very grand. And apparently found over 297 gigabytes of data from the organization. It's mainly sort of HR data.
Mm-hmm.
Fun. I'm not phone shaming though, but you guys use your phone as much as you can. If I can check my screen time, I'll tell you how much it is. Hold on. Bear with me. Feel free to go if you're not interested. I don't know.
How bet on 3 hours, actually?
3 hours. I think it will be high. I do think it will be high, but I reckon I can justify it. Let me see. How much do you think is bad before I proceed? How much is bad before we proceed?
I think more than 4 is bad. It's really bad.
I'm going to sound like a... I'm going to sound like... apologies. I'm going to sound like a hypocrite.
I think this episode should be cancelled.
I am being honest. But I can justify it. Guys. 5 hours, 12 minutes.
Okay, is within the average what is really bad.
It's quite a lot.
I thought it was actually more because you do spend a lot of time on your phone.
One of the main apps is my gym app. It just tracks my work. It tracks my workouts. It tracks my workouts.
This is all the things that you want
Miles to announce. Miles is giving me a lot of grief behind the camera. I want you to know that. It's got my gym app on it. It's got my calorie counting app on it. It's got YouTube on it. I watch a lot of YouTube. And I feel like that's justified, guys. Other than that, I'm not really on social medias.
Exactly. Yeah.
No, not today, Charlotte. Not today. I've been at work today. This is my daily average. Actually, I'll justify myself further. I sleep to YouTube. I fall asleep to YouTube. So that will really tick up the time.
What do you mean?
Like, I can't fall asleep to
you
silence.
Like put like frogs in the background. Is that a thing?
No.
You fall asleep
I'll have like a video on and I'll fall asleep. So in reality, guys, it's probably...
I can imagine like you having like frogs or whales in the like...
No, it's not.
For you to fall asleep.
It's not like ASMR. Exactly. It's not ASMR. I'll put a video on. I'm like a 6-hour video explaining all the Siths in the Star Wars universe or something, and that'll put me to sleep. Not that it's boring, mind, but just that's how I've conditioned my body. So in reality...
I think Maya must have a joy to sleep.
No, I got my headphones on. My headphones on. In reality, guys, it's probably more like 45 minutes. It's probably more like 45 minutes. So I'm actually pretty good in what I preach there, Charlie. But yeah, exactly, Lucy. It's stuff like that. It's just little stuff that you can just have running through your ears, you know. I like the histories of stuff.
I feel like the fact that I just go to sleep to go to bed just for sleep without any... I feel terrible now. Because apparently there are loads of people that actually do this.
Me and you know, Ball. I did not expect you to come out with that. Yes, no, I love that. I do love that. It's always the Star Wars stuff that puts me to sleep, which is... Maybe that's telling, but I do like Star Wars, so I don't know why it put me to sleep. But my body's... If I try to sleep without listening to stuff now, I cannot sleep. I actually can't. And when I do wake up, I feel horribly ratty. But it sounds like a problem, potentially. Sounds like I might have an issue.
I will just let you talk.
That's my screen time, guys. See, transparency there. So I hope you appreciated that.
Yeah.
And we've run over now because I've absolutely wasted your time. A lot of excuses, you're right. But at the end of the day, I'm just fibbing. What can I say? I've got to sound really clever, aren't I? So I'll
definitely send you some links for tonight for you to see.
To watch. Yeah, if anybody has any recommendations, let me know, because I'm absolutely on board with that. I feel like you all know far too much about me now, in fact, to a point where it's getting a little bit problematic. I'm going to start disclosing stuff about like my childhood and stuff and my relationship with my father.
Between you and this podcast, all
like,
of it.
Like we're bonding, maybe. I think I've lost the plot. I actually think I've lost it.
That's how I feel.
Let's call the podcast there, and I'm going to probably go somewhere and put my head through the wall.
We will continue this conversation probably with a beer.
Right, yeah. Well, on that note, guys, have a lovely weekend. And we will catch you next week for a topical session. I don't know what, but we'll join you for something. All right, thanks.
Thank you very much. Have a good weekend. Bye-bye.